It's Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. You usually think of organ music confined to churches. That's not what's happening Friday. At the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, Illinois Symphony Orchestra director Ken Lamb talks with Charlie Schlenker. The Saint-Saëns organ concerto often go together on recordings. Lamb says they make a good pairing.
Oh, goodness. Well, I mean, they're both French. I think that's an attractive pairing. And, of course, the Saint-Saëns organ symphony is not quite enough to fill a CD. So I guess that's what people often think of. You know, there are a lot of other French organ concertos, lesser-known ones. The Poulenc is probably the most well-known. And it's interesting. I mean, the two works are different. I mean, it is very different. I think, you know, the fact that they're both you know, French, I think, has a lot to do with it. And
contrast their sensibilities, would you?
Oh gosh. Well, I mean, the Saint-Saëns organ symphony is. Well, the way Saint-Saëns use the organ is the organ does not serve a concertant function. It is part and parcel of the orchestra. It has a prominent part, but it only plays in the second part.
It doesn't. It plays in the first part, but it's
very subtly in the first part, in the slow movement, and of course then it transforms itself into this big, huge chords and in the second movement. I find the Saint-Saëns symphony easier to understand as a whole. Because it's very unified, the work, in many ways. It is also very original, because instead of the four-movement structure, we have two movements, although each movement is really divided into two parts. It is what we call a cyclical symphony in terms of motifs. So in some ways, you know, it looks back to something that Berlioz would have done, for instance, in the Symphonie Fantastique. In Saint-Saëns' organ symphony, you hear the motifs really at the beginning of the symphony, and he uses it, you know, throughout the piece, transformed, developed. So, in a sense, you know, unlike a lot of Mozart, Haydn, or even Beethoven. You can't mix and match the movements. You know, if you look at a Haydn symphony, you can put, you know, a fourth movement of the symphony and into a first movement, and somehow it still works. And in fact, in the 18th, 19th century, that's regularly concerts would do that. They would not like the slow movement of this symphony and just put another slow movement with it. But with these cyclical symphonies, these movements belong to one another.
What makes it so enduringly accessible? You've got it in everything from television commercials to movies about pigs.
Movies about pigs, yes. You're referring, of course, to Babe, you know, that sequence. A lot of times when composers use the organ, it is to augment the orchestral sound. It is to as if to say that, well, I'm writing for a big orchestral tutti. It's not quite big enough. I want still more to pad it out. But Saint-Saëns uses the organ Saint-Saëns uses the organ in that way too, but he also uses the organ in other ways. In the slow movement, it is a very atmospheric. There are ways that in the last movement, it really appears almost as a soloist, almost. I think the reason it's so iconic is because of you think of the squareness of the tunes. You can almost imagine, you know, it is, and the tunes are majestic in the structure. We'll be right back. You know, when he writes a C major chord, he goes for it. You know, he gives the organ the entire span of the instrument with the pedals and so on. And what does the orchestra do? The orchestra actually celebrates it with fanfares and the trumpets and big chords and the strings and timpanies and so on. So a lot about, you know, Saint-Saëns, I think, wrote this when he was in his early 50s, and he said so himself, didn't he? He said, I've given everything of myself in this symphony. It cannot get any better. It's got great tunes in every movement, and somehow all the themes are linked to each other. And that's why I think we love it so much, is because, you know, we make those connections ourselves. Of course, when you study it, it's incredible.
Tell us about your soloist.
Oh, Felix, yes. He's a German soloist, and he, I think, is a bit of a child prodigy. He's been doing this for a very long time. In fact, one of his feats is to play the complete works of Bach in a very short, you know, consecutive period of time.
And Bach wrote a lot of organ music.
A ton of organ music. I think it takes days to do that. And of course, the issue with doing a program like this is you've got to have an organ. Well, for this particular organist, there is an organ company in the States that built an organ for him to tour with. It's known as their touring organ model. Of course, it's electronic. But he put everything into a trailer, and he just, you know, drives to wherever he plays the concert, I think.
Have you worked with one of those electronic organs before? How does the sound differ?
I played on one. When I was younger, I used to play the organ. And, they're pretty good with technology these days. Of course, it feels a little different. You don't get the... It's interesting. They even imitate the blower, the sound of the blower, you know, with these electronic organs. So they do a good job.
The organ, as you just mentioned, presents a big transportation issue, and it presents a mastery issue. It's one of the most complex instruments to play. You almost have to have four brains because you're operating both hands and both legs at the same time. Is organ music still alive in a compositional sense in the world today?
Oh, absolutely. I think so. You know, we call it the king of instruments, you know, or at least the organist would call it the king of instruments. The feeling, there's nothing quite like playing the organ to its full range of possibilities, you know, when you pull out all the stops, as they say, you know, and then hit the chords and the pedals, especially when you're playing in a big church, it's overwhelming. And of course, you know, you mentioned mastery of the instrument. I mean, a lot of the times, you know, people pride in writing independent lines, you know, for both hands and both feet. And you really have to have a number of, you know, different brains to do that. And I'm always astonished how organists can do that. What's also interesting, of course, is that the organ is essentially a wind instrument because, you know, you blow air. And it mimics a lot of brass instruments, reed, woodwinds, and, you know, it has strings, stops, where it tries to mimic them. But essentially, the mechanism is a wind instrument.
Also on the program is a bit of Bach. Give us that little lagniappe, would
yes.
you?
Yes. Well, Bach, of course, as we were just talking about, it was an organist. But, of course, this time round, we're actually giving you an orchestral transcription by Edward Elgar, the English composer. This transcription is not a literal transcription. You still get all the notes, but this is basically what Elgar thought Bach would have done had he had the means to a modern-day orchestra.
You know, there have been a lot of things like that. Leopold Stokowski did a whole bunch of transcriptions for the Philadelphia Orchestra of various works, some right. Bach works too. What do you have to do to remain faithful to the spirit while still giving it an orchestral feel?
It's interesting. I mean, you mentioned Stokowski's transcriptions, and those transcriptions are literal transcriptions. So Stokowski basically used all of Bach's notes and assigned it to different instruments. Now, he might have put in the timpani here and there, but he didn't really change anything. It's quite a faithful transcription. Elgar is a little bit different. I don't think Elgar was interested in just orchestrating what Bach wrote, but Elgar is more interesting. If I can even use the word almost an expressionist take, what did Bach would have felt? What would Bach have done had he had these instruments? Basically the same ideas, but so Elgar was quite liberal with what he did. You still get the same tune, but you know, you have trombone glisses and harps all over the place and a ton of percussion, and he changes note values and give the orchestra different figures as if to make a point. So, okay, this is what Bach have meant for that gesture to sound like. Oh, he must have. If he had trombones, he would have put a slide there. So it is great fun.
Ken Lamb is the Illinois Symphony Orchestra Music Director. The ISO performs Friday at the BCPA. He spoke with Charlie Schlenker. You're listening to Eugene Ormandy conduct the Philadelphia Orchestra. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal. Find the full show podcast at WGLT.org or at iTunes. I'm Mike McCurdy. This is GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.